Okay, this week's parasha is Parshas Bamidbar, Tavshin Ayin Ches. We begin on page 726. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Midbar Sinai v'Ol Moed. Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai Desert in the Ol Moed, in the Mishkan. Be'echad al-Chedesh Hasheni, on the first of the second month, Bashana Hashenis of the second year, the Seisam Eretz Mitzrayim Leimar, that they went out from the land of Egypt, saying, Su'u Esreish Kaladas B'nei Yisrael, count the number, the heads of all the assembly of the children of Israel, according to their families, according to the house of their fathers, the mispar shemais, a counting of names, every male lugul galoisam, every male to their head count. So Rashi says, what does it mean lugul galoisam to their head count? Al yidei shkolim bekal al gogolos. The way you're actually going to count them is that per head actually means that each person is going to give a half shekel, as was described in Parshas Kisisa. You're not going to directly count the people, count the heads, you're going to count the coins. And the reason for this is because, as we know, we do not count people, because when you count can bring to ayin hara, it can bring to different kinds of bad things, and therefore, without getting majorly into that whole discussion, but counting is something that, through ayin hara, the evil eye, can bring trouble, can be punishment, and therefore you don't directly count, but rather you count through shkolim. So that was what was bothering Rashi. Rashi's telling us you're doing with a shekel because it says count them by a head count, and you're not supposed to do a head count on people. So therefore Rashi says it doesn't actually mean a head count, it means with shkolim, with the half coins. Now we know that in Parshas Kisisa that we read a number of months ago, it says Kisisa Sreish B'nei Yisrael of Kudayim. When you count the Jewish people according to their numbers, each person is going to give an atonement, and what is that? A half a shekel. So there, when the Torah talks about counting, it says clearly, do it through a half a shekel. Here it doesn't say that. But Rashi says, here too it means, do it through a half shekel. The Kli Yakar, in his commentary, you know, brings down Rashi, now, there are those who argue on Rashi because, again, the Pasuk doesn't say through a half shekel, it just says by head count. And therefore, they want to say that, in essence, for whatever reason, you didn't really need to count, you could have counted them by heads. And over there in Parshas Kisisa, the reason it's a half shekel is because it was a way of also donating money towards the construction of the Mishkan. The Kli Yakar doesn't like that, and the Kli Yakar says the following. That clearly the reason why, in Parshas Kisisa, the reason why the Torah mandated that when you're doing the census, each person gives a half shekel, is because if you count them directly, it's a problem of ayin hara. The thing, says the Kli Yakar, is that why was the Torah concerned with ayin hara there? So he says for two reasons. Number one, it was right after the Jewish people left Egypt. And number two, was right after the sin of the golden calf. So to go ahead and to count the Jewish people, what was the final number that we come out with? Typically, we always come out with this number when the Jewish people are counted. 603,550. Later on in the desert, it's a little bit less. That's the number. That's a lot of people.
Of the men.
It's a lot of the men from 20 to 60. There's a lot of people there. And the truth is that here they were slaves in Egypt, and we know it talks about how, as much as they tried to enslave them, which would decrease their population, which would increase their population. We also know that 4/5 of them died during the darkness. But the Kli Yakar's approach here is that to discover after the slavery in Egypt that there were this many Jews is an impressive thing. It's a surprising thing. It's not expected. That's how he sees it. He sees that it was not expected that they should have this many people after everything that they've gone through. And therefore, if what's going to come out from this counting is something unexpected brings ayin hara. He says, for instance, you see this guy, he seems to be poor, and he's a contemporary. He's driving around in a nice car. So it's like, what's he doing in that kind of car? You're surprised. It's unexpected. Unexpected becomes, you kind of give it a kind of a funny look. Well, you give it a funny look, somehow or another, that's ayin hara. And somehow or another, that's going to go ahead and bring problems. But that's, again, when something is not expected, when something doesn't look right, or something, I shouldn't say it doesn't look right, something is unexpected, and perhaps it doesn't look right, and therefore that brings ayin hara. But if something's expected, if you see a guy who you know is wealthy, he's driving around a fancy car, he said, the Kliyaka says there's no ayin hara there because it's expected. There's nothing strange. There's no one's looking at it in any kind of way. You know, I just remember, the Michtam Eliyahu, I believe, says that ayin hara comes from jealousy. It could be, again, this is just a thought came in my head right now, not worked through, may not be correct. But, you know, it's almost like the poor guy driving the rich car, driving in the car, there you kind of resent it more than the wealthy man. Not to say that people don't resent wealthy people, but it's even more resent when there's somebody that you're not expecting to have has. And therefore, okay, maybe that's no examples. I'm not sure that's going to follow through all examples. But therefore, it says the Kli Yakar, it's over here where after the enslavement of the Jewish people and after the sin of the golden calf, where there were many people that were killed because of it and many people died because of it, to still come out with this kind of a number, that's surprising. Therefore, Hashem says, no direct counting, you got to do it with a coin. At this point of time, this counting, which the Kli Yakar is saying is a separate counting than what took place in Kisisa, the 32nd year of being in the, that was the first year, that's when they first came out. This is already the second year that they're out of Egypt. They know the situation. People have already taken in what's going on. The Jewish people are out of Egypt, they're a nation, people see what's going on. There's no more surprises. And therefore, being that there's nothing unexpected to come out with this number, would it be unexpected, there is no need to have to do it through a shekel. So the Kli Yakar is saying differently than Rashi, and he's saying that because he knows there are other commentaries that do argue with Rashi, and based on the fact that here there is no mention of the coins, so he is following that approach. There was no counting with coins here. You could count them directly, because there was an issue of ayin hara, because it wasn't expected they should have this many people. Therefore, in advance of that, Hashem says, give a coin, don't count directly. But over here, where there was something unexpected, you could count even without a coin. Which really goes against, in many ways, the custom not to count people directly. Because if you're, if you're in a shul and you want to make sure there's a minion, because you weren't expecting, if you have to count, it means you're not sure there's going to be a minion, so that's called unexpected. I don't know if that works together. But that's his approach. Just wanted to share it with you.
Yeah. Half question.
So one is, so they were trying to prevent surprise by the Jewish people?
It should not be surprising by the Jewish people themselves.
And second question is, if you know that there are 603,550 half shekels, how different is it from deducing that there are...
Good point. You're saying, so you're going to know it anyway. Yeah, that's a good question. For some reason, it has something to do with directly looking at the people. You're making a very good point. There's something about directly, because we know that when we talk about counting, right? We say don't count direct, count in an indirect way. Somehow or another, that solves the problem. So here also, that's the point.
Half a shekel is no reason. Why they call it one shekel?
Well, that's a whole discussion over there. That's a discussion why Hashem asks for a half shekel, not a whole shekel. Half a shekel, they say, is to show that you always need somebody else to be a whole. A lot of different explanations that are given. Okay. All right. The next thing that I want to do, I'm going to have to turn a couple of pages, and we're going to go to page 730. Okay, page 730, towards the bottom, where it says, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Ach es matei levi leisivkaid, the tribe of Levi you shall not count, and their heads you shall not, and their numbers you shall not count amongst the Jewish people. So basically, when the rest of the Jewish people were counted as a whole, Shevet Levi was separate. They were not counted amongst the Jewish people, and eventually they would have their own count. Now, if you take a look in Rashi on the bottom here, Rashi has two explanations as to why Shevet Levi was not included in the census with the rest of the people. So first, Rashi says, "Kedayu ligin shel melech liyos nimna levadai." The legion of the king, those that are going to be giving the special job of serving in the Mishkan, the legion of the king, these special people, they deserve their own count. It was a sign of chashivas, of significant for the special status of the tribe of Levi. Dover acher, says Rashi, another explanation. Tzafa Kadosh Baruch Hu Shasid La'amid Gezeira Al Kol HaNimnim Miben Esra Mishana V'Mala Shemusa Bamidbar. Hashem knew in the future that anyone included in this count from 20 to 60, they would fall under a decree that they're going to die in the desert, which happened by the sin of the spies. Omar Aliyu Elu Bechlal. Hashem said, I don't want the Leviim amongst them, Lefi Shehem Shali, because they're mine. Shaloi Toba Ego, because they did not sin by the sin of the golden calf. So Rashi is telling us the second explanation. Why is the tribe of Levi not in the census? The answer is because Hashem knew that everyone in this census would have a decree put upon them to die in the desert, not in the land of Israel. And therefore, so that shouldn't happen to the tribe of Levi, the tribe of Levi was not put into... the tribe of Levi should not be... So Hashem didn't want the tribe of Levi put into the count, so that they shouldn't be in the decree. And Hashem says, why? Because they didn't sin by the golden calf. So the Sivzei Chachamim here asks that Rashi should have said something differently. Rashi shouldn't say that the reason why they wouldn't be in the decree, they wouldn't be in the count, so they shouldn't be in the decree because they didn't sin by the golden calf. The golden calf wasn't where the decree was made for all these people not to enter the land of Israel. That decree was made by the sin of the spies. So if you want to say that the tribe of Levi was innocent of any kind of sin, and therefore I don't want them to be in the count, then don't say because they didn't sin by the golden calf. Say because they didn't sin by the sin of the spies. Says the Sifsei Chachamim from the Mizrahi, commentary on Rashi, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, that we must say that they didn't sin by the spies. That the tribe of Levi did sin by the spies. Doesn't say anywhere they didn't. We know by the sin of the golden calf they didn't sin. By the sin of the spies, maybe they did. Right. Now, at the same time, the Sifsei Chachamim brings down that there is a Rashi that seems to say that the tribe of Levi was not involved in the sin of the spies. At least they weren't involved in the sending of the spies, which would seem like to say, well, we have a Rashi somewhere else that says they didn't sin by the spies. And the answer to that could be, says Sifsei Chachamim, is that Rashi just says they weren't in the plan of sending spies. But maybe after the spies came back and gave the report and everybody lost their confidence, the tribe of Levi was like that also. So therefore, Rashi says, you know why they weren't in the count? Why weren't they going to be in the count? Why weren't they be in the decree? Because the Jewish people, why eventually did they have the decree? Because they had two sins. They had the sin of the golden calf and the sin of the spies. The tribe of Levi only had the sin of the spies and the tribe of the golden calf. And therefore, Hashem said, let's not put them in the decree, because therefore I don't want them in this count, because anybody in this count would be in that decree. The question still remains, though, that if the point is that you need two sins in order to be in a decree, and one is not going to be enough to have that decree not to enter the land of Israel, then who cares if they're in the count? Even if they're not being counted, even if they are being counted, they didn't do the sins that for that they should be punished for not to enter the land of Israel. So what's the difference whether in the decree or not? So therefore, I want to share with you an explanation given by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Chaim Shmulevitz brings a concept which we find in a number of places, but he brings it out in something very interesting. Take a look. I'm going to ask you to turn a few pages ahead. And this is going to be in Parshas Shlach. This is Yud Dalid. Okay, page 808. Page 808, three lines from the bottom. Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Ve'yamusu anoshim moitzi di basa aretz ro'aba ma'gefil lefnei Hashem. And the people who are those who spread the bad report about the land, they all died in a plague before God. Now, before this, Hashem already made the decree and told Moshe to tell the Jewish people, this generation is dying in the desert. They're not entering the land of Israel. And then it says, the spies, those who again gave a bad report, they died in a plague. The Yeshua ben Nun of Kalev ben Yefuneh, Chayim Anashim Ahim, Hahochim Lasser Asaretz. The two spies, Yeshua ben Nun, Kalev ben Yefuneh, they the ones who lived from those people who went to spy out the land. They had come back with a good report, and therefore, they didn't do anything wrong, seemingly, and therefore, they shouldn't be included in the decree. So the commentator of the Arach Chaim asks, the Arach Chaim is bothered like this. Basically, if the Pasuk Lamed Zayin said that those who spread the bad report died, then it should be obvious that those who didn't spread the bad report didn't die. So it's really superfluous to have to mention Shua ben Nun and Kalev living, because you know they didn't spread a bad report. Okay. And really, okay, so let's say you want to say the Torah wants to mention it. They want to mention it, right? That Yeshua, then let's say straight out Yeshua and Kalev lived. But why does it have to say they lived from those people who went to spy the land? We know they spied the land. Why do we have to mention, repeat again, that they lived from those people who spy the land, they lived. Just say they lived. They don't even mention it at all. You can figure out, because the Pasuk says that the ones who died are the ones who spread a bad report. So you know it's not Kalev and Yeshua. Says the Arach Chaim, a very, very powerful lesson. And he explains it like this. There's a Gemara by Babasra that says that Yorah ben Menashe was the son of Yosef, Yorah was the son of Menashe. Yorah ben Menashe noel ben Yaakov. He was born in the days of Yaakov. He was born in Yaakov's lifetime. And the Gemara asks from the fact that we have a source that says that Yorah ben Menashe entered the land of Israel with the Jewish people. Okay? V'tiritz Rav Acha, shenigzra gezeira loy al pachas v'ben esrim v'loy al yesen v'ben shishim adkan. The answer is, the decree on the people not to enter the land of Israel was from 20 to 60. If you're longer than 20 or older than 60, you weren't in the decree. So you could be really old. If you're above 60, you can be 100 or whatever it's going to be by the time you enter the land of Israel, and you can enter the land of Israel because you weren't in the decree. V'hinei mashalei tiretz ha-gamara sh'or ha-yatzad ha-gamar. How about the Gemara answering, and he's basing this on something else the Gemara says. Why didn't the Gemara say, you know why? So the question was, how could it be Yor was born in the lifetime of Yaakov? Why wasn't he included in the decree to die in the desert? You know why, says the Arach Chaim? Why didn't the Gemara say he was a tzaddik gomer? He clearly didn't do anything wrong. He clearly didn't sin by the calf or by the spies. He didn't do anything like that. So why wasn't that a good enough Gemara? Why do we have to answer, well, the decree was very specific. The point of that is to show the righteousness of the righteous man is not enough to save him from that decree. Okay, and really this is a Gemara. There's a Gemara Baba Kama that talks about this and says that there are times where the mashkas, Hashem gives a destructive force the power to do so, and once the force is unleashed, it can destroy the righteous and the wicked. Gemara, Baba Kama. Now there are times that doesn't happen, and at times it does. And sometimes within the same situation there are those who survive and those who don't survive. But there is a rule that you could have the tzaddik, the righteous, perishing amongst the wicked, because that is how it happens. When Hashem allows a destructive force to go out, it has a destructive force, it is an unstoppable force, nothing can stand when it's in its way, and it can even actually take those who weren't worthy of being destroyed. And he doesn't mention that in Kamar here, but at Sachar, that's what he means. Over here also, by Yorah ben Menashe. Yorah ben Menashe could have been a very righteous person, but if he would have been in the decree not to the land of Israel, he wouldn't have entered the land. Because that's what happens. That's part of what happens when you're in a decree that comes upon a group. So therefore, V'humayim rahakas of Yeshua chayu, pirish. Tam shechayu hu liyaisa ben anoshim ahochim lasur, hi she'amda lahem. You know why Yeshua and Kalev survived? Not because they were righteous, but because they were from those who went ahead. They were from those who went out and spied. But if they wouldn't have been from the spies, rather they would have been, just been with the rest of the Jewish people, the decree would have come upon them also. Hagam shem sadikim gemurim, although they're completely righteous. Litzat shahayu lamayla me esrim kshiyasim mitzrayim lamata mishishim, because they were between the ages of 20 and 60. So the Arachayim, he's bringing this principle, like the Gemara says, if you're at age of 20, between 20 and 60 at the point of the decree, you're in the decree. How did Caleb and Yeshua get out of the decree? They got out of the decree because they were essentially part of a different group. They're from the spies. The spies had their decree, and the rest of the Jewish people had their decree. But the decree of the spies, Caleb and Yeshua, they weren't in that decree because of their righteousness. Now, it would seem to me that we could ask a question, well, but if Caleb and Yeshua are part of the decree of the spies, why did they get caught up in the decree of the spies? If they're in the decree of the Jewish people, 20 to 60, we're saying that even though they're innocent, they would have been caught up in the decree. Okay, but they weren't part of that decree. They were the decree of the spies. So why weren't they caught up in the decree of the spies? So what's the answer to that? So either the answer is it's a different kind of decree somehow or another. Or, as Reb Chaim Shlomitz brings down, to also bring out this whole idea, is that one of the most famous questions that we have at Pesach time, or when we study Yetzias Mitzrayim, is that the Torah tells us the firstborn became holy because when Hashem smote the firstborn, he smote the Egyptian firstborn, didn't smite the Jewish firstborn, right? Pesach, right? He skipped over the houses, and the Jewish people's firstborn survived. The obvious question is, why shouldn't they survive? Why should they be killed? They're not the Egyptians. They're not the Egyptians. Why should they be killed? And the answer, one explanation is because of this idea. Once the mashkes, once that destructive force is given the power to go after firstborn, essentially go after every firstborn. So the fact that the Jewish firstborn were saved from that decree, that was something unique. That was something special. Yes, they should have died, but Hashem didn't allow that to happen. Therefore, they got the sanctity. And then he brings down from the Drashas Haran, that again brings out the same idea. The Drashas, a way quotes it, is Shekasher Nischad Shefa Shefeya Mamshech Eze Dover Masik, that when there is brought out this flow, continuous flow of some kind of destructive force, Yikabo Boy Hezek Am Ha'ish Asherenenu Roish En Eshkafi Ma'isav, it will basically take in even a man who isn't worthy of punishment due to his actions. Imloy shiyehe elav schus prati, unless he's got some specific merit, yogan elav Hashem yisparach ba'adai mesakahu, then Hashem will protect him. So there is this concept that you could have a situation where even the righteous are going to be swallowed up, but you'll happen, there could be a righteous, but there could be a righteous person, or maybe any person, who's got some kind of a special merit that for some reason protects him, which only Hashem knows why. But the way it works is he's got some kind of special merit, and he's saved. Okay, so now, if we take this concept, we could say that, you know, that when it came to the decree of the spies, Yeshua and Caleb were saved. Why? Because they clearly had a special merit. They clearly had a special merit. They didn't spread the Lashon Hara on the land. They didn't bring a bad report about the land, and therefore they were spared. So this is Reb Chaim Shlomitz's whole discussion here. And this is when he wants to get back to our Rashi. When our Rashi talks about why weren't the Levium counted, the answer is, if the Levium would have been counted amongst the 20 to 60, we know that anybody who was 20 to 60 was included in that decree. They were included in that decree. Okay? So therefore Hashem said, I don't want them in that decree. Why are they deserving not to be in the decree? Now again, what we're trying to, that it would seem to me that we're trying to accomplish here, according to this explanation, that we don't have to say, or at least I think this is the way to approach it, we're trying not the Simsa Chachamim brought down from the Mizrahi that the Levium did sin by the spies, but they didn't sin by the golden calf, and therefore they didn't deserve to be punished. So if they didn't deserve to be punished, then why did the decree? Okay? So the answer could be that, again, whether they, maybe even they didn't sin by the spies. They didn't sin by the spies. But if they're going to be counted, then they're no worse than what Yeshua and Kalev would have been if they would have been in the count, and they would have been part of the decree. So even though they wouldn't have sinned, they would have been in the decree, and they wouldn't go to Eretz Israel. So Hashem says, no, I'm not going to have them in the decree. Now, why are they not going to be in the decree? Why? What's going to be there? What's going to be the reason why Hashem wouldn't include them in the decree? Other righteous people will be included in the decree. The tribe of Levi won't be in the decree. And I'll make sure they're not in the decree by not counting them amongst the Jewish people. That's how I'm going to get them out of it. Why are they deserving of that? The answer is, they didn't sin by the golden calf. That was their special merit to say that they're going to be saved. Now, for whatever reason, the way Hashem says they're going to be saved now is not by having them be counted and still be excluded, but rather not having them in the count at all. You know, it's hard to know why, which way is what. But at the same time, the point I think here would be that we could say that according to Rashi, according to what Rashi's saying is that Rashi's saying, Lefish Leichatu Be'ego, they didn't sin by the ego. The truth is, they didn't sin by the spies either. But that sinning by the spies wouldn't necessarily have saved them, because we know that according to Arachayim, wouldn't have saved Yeshua and Kalev. They would have been part of that decree. Because they're a part of a different decree, because they're a part of a different group, they're a part of the spies, therefore they weren't included in that actual decree at that point of time of the sin of the spies. But anybody else who would have been between the ages of 20 and 60, even if they would have been righteous, they would have been included in that decree. Because that decree goes on anybody between 20 and 60, anybody who was counted. The tribe of Levi, Hashem, they don't want that to happen to them. They don't want that to happen to them. He didn't want them to be included in that decree and automatically be included in the decree. And why? Because they sinned and sinned by the golden calf. That's why they got out of that. That's why Hashem is saying, I'm not going to let the decree of the spies affect them. I'm not going to let the decree of the spies affect them, because not only don't they have the sin of the spies, they also don't have the sin of the golden calf. And therefore, the way I will not have the decree go upon them is by leaving them out of the count completely. So perhaps that's another approach here.
So you mentioned Pesach, the firstborn. So what you're saying, this was this unstoppable force that normally would have killed them as well. And so what happened? He was a special protection?
So the answer would be that the Hashem still spared them.
Right.
Right?
By what means?
By what means? So we do know that they were given a mitzvah to do, right? They were supposed to shech the Korban Pesach, they were supposed to put the blood outside, right? So there was something there. Now again, maybe that something alone wasn't enough on its own to really save them, but you have to have something.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, no, I understand that. But talking about unstoppable force, but in the other nine, or maybe some subset of the plagues, I believe you told us a while ago that Jews did not suffer them.
So you want to know what the difference is?
Right.
It's an interesting question. I don't have an answer to that. That's a very interesting question. Never thought of it. Why don't we say the same thing there?
Right.
Unless this is only a rule by a what's called a mashchis, which could be a killing force. You know, the gezeira that we had, you know, is they're going to die, right? So anything that has to do more with, like, dying and destruction, dying, you know, I mean, again, clearly the other plagues were destructive. But again, maybe it has to do specifically with dying. I don't know. That's a good question. Okay. Let's move on. And now we're going to go back to Parashat Bamidbar, of course. And we're going to go to page 736. Okay. The Eva told us Aaron and Moshe. These are the offspring of Aaron and Moshe. The Yom Dibra Hashem es Moshe by Har Sinai, on the day that Hashem spoke with Moshe on Har Sinai. The Eva Shmeis b'nei Aaron. These are the names of the sons of Aaron. Habachar Nadav, the firstborn's name was Nadav. Then came Va'aviv Elazar v'Isamar, Aviv Elazar and Isamar. So Rashi points out that the Pasuk starts, Pasuk Aleph, instead, these are the offsprings of Aaron and Moshe. And at the end, the only ones offsprings that are mentioned are Aaron's, not Moshe's. So Rashi says, at the end, the Pasuk only mentions the sons of Aaron. V'nikru told us Moshe, but they are called the offspring of Moshe, v'ishalim dan Torah, because Moshe taught them Torah. Melamed that teaches us, shkola melamed es ben chaveri Torah, if you teach someone else's child Torah, malav akasav kilo yoldai, the Torah considers as if you gave birth to them.
What about your own child if you teach them Torah?
Even better.
So that doesn't say?
Even better. You don't, it's not, there's no point. You don't, your own child, you gave birth because it's your own child. The point is that even a child that biologically you didn't give birth to, you'll get credit as if you brought them into the world because of the Torah you teach them. And that, therefore, the point is because of the fact by teaching them the Torah, you're giving them a life in this world, life the next world, as if you brought them into this world. Now, what's interesting to note is that if you look here, they cite Sanhedrin Yitessam Adbeis, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. I don't know if Rashi had a different text to the Gemara there, but actually the Gemara says, Amar Reish Lakish, Kol Malamed Es Ben Chaveri Torah, whoever teaches someone else's son Torah, Malav Akasav Kilu Asa'i. The Torah considers as if he made him. Shenemar, as it says, V'sanefesh Asher Asu B'charan. When Parshas Lech Lecha, when Abraham leaves, it says he went and he took Hanepesh Asher Asu B'charan, the souls that were made in Charan. Mifarish Rashi Shaman, Rashi learns there, the Metargaminan, the Targum, Unkelis, translate, what does it mean, the souls that were made? The Shabidu La'iraisa Bacharin. The souls that were made means the ones that Abraham brought to believe in the Torah, the ones that he subjugated to the Torah, and that's called Asiya. That's called making them. So the Pasuk says, the Nefesh Asherasu Bacharin, the souls that were made. That means the people that they brought to believe in Hashem and to live by the Torah. And the Torah describes that process as the souls that they made. They made these souls. And therefore, here too, it's the same idea. You teach someone else Torah, it's like you're making them. Just like Avraham was described as making those souls by subjugating them to the Torah, so too, when you teach someone else a son Torah, it's as if you are making him. Now, it could be that Rashi, you know, just decided to use a little bit of different wording, but it's the same idea. Making, giving birth, it's the idea that you're bringing them into life and giving them life. So there's a very interesting, I saw an interesting explanation here in a sefer called Ela HaDvarim, in which he wants to say that both versions, both ways of saying it, carry a message. You know, Rashi used the word Yoldai, and perhaps again he wanted to bring that out. He wanted to interpret the Gemara that way, maybe to make it clear, I don't know. But the point is that whether you use the word as if Yolda, you gave birth to them, or use the wording of the Gemara, made them, this Sefer Ela Dvarim wants to say that each one carries an important message. And actually, you know, this message that was being given, you teach someone else Torah, it's as if you're giving birth to him, is a message to the teacher. Like, look what you're accomplishing, look what you're doing. So he wants to suggest that there's a nice message here to the teacher. Yes, we're definitely giving the teacher a nice pat on the back and saying to them, look what you're accomplishing when you teach someone else Torah. But there's a difference between saying that you are yoldai, which means as if you gave birth, or asai, made. The child that you actually biologically bring into the world, that's your child that you love. It's a child you have mercy on. There's a certain emotional connection there. And that's a good thing. But sometimes it has its problems. Because you love the child so much and you have mercy on the child so much, you don't see their faults. You're not always ready to discipline them the way you should. You know, there's a lot of different times that, you know, as much as we try to keep things in order and discipline our children, there's a certain degree where certain situations are the love for them, the mercy we have for them, could actually make us not sometimes discipline them or teach them the way that should be done. Then you have the teacher, right? The teacher, who we're saying it's like you're making the child, right? So the teacher that teacher is going to make a child. That teacher has to be that they mold the child, they teach the child Torah, and they teach Torah to the child, and they mold the child through Torah, and they develop a Torah personality. They're making the child, and they'll have it in them to do it, but sometimes they won't have the mercy. Sometimes they won't have that fatherly love. And therefore, the message of either word is when Rashi says, if you teach your son Torah, teach someone else's son Torah, it's like you gave birth to him, means see yourself like a father. Make sure you love the student like it's your own child. The Gemara, when it says the words asoy, making, it's telling the teacher, you got to make this child. You're the one that's going to do it. Because after all, you're not the actual father. And therefore, you're the one who has it in them that could actually mold them the way they should be molded. Okay, just also remember, mercy and love too. But also remember, aso, you're making the child. You're molding the child. And that's what you're making them. That's what you're doing. That's your job. Your job is to make them through the teaching of Torah that you do. That's what you got to do. You can't slack off on that. But at the same time, remember, it's also kili yoldus. See if you gave birth to them. Make sure you still have the mercy and the love for them. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is, right, take a look on page 738. This is Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayidabra Hashem el Moshe b'Bar Sinai Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert, saying, "Pekoides b'nei Levi, count the sons of Levi, lebeis havoisam mishpachosam, to the house of their fathers according to their families. Kol zachar, every male, mibin chaydish v'malativ kedem, from a month up, you shall count them." Okay, so the Levim are being counted from a month old. Now, at the end of the day, the Ramban points out, the famous Ramban, "Hinei lehayu shevet alevi kishar hashvatim." From this census, we see the Shevet Levi was very different than the other tribes. Ben Chaydish V'mala, because at the end of the day, from a month old and up, what was the total number of them? Rak Esrim Ushnayim Elef. There were only 22,000. Esrim Ushnayim Elef, 22,000. That's how many Levim there were from a month and up. Ben Shleish V'shana. And when it comes from 30 years, 30 to 50, which was the age of when a Levi does his service, kulam shmeina salafim. It's about 8,000 of them. V'hinei lo yagiyum ben esrim shana v'mala. So it comes out that if you want to look at the age of the tribe of Levi, from let's say 20 years and up, l'chat, it won't even come out being l'chatsi shevet miYisrael apacha shebekulam. It won't even be, meaning again, if you're going from 30 and up, 30 and up was only 8,000, right? So 20 and up, how much more? Not much more, okay? V'nei lo yagim ben Esrim shana v'mala, from 20 years up, l'chatsi, it doesn't even reach half of the smallest of the tribes. Of all the tribes that are counted, the number of Levium in that age range is not even going to be near half. V'adai le'nasi v'arim sh'tiya kedusha v'chala b'hem. Now you'll say, you know, well, maybe the problem with so many Levium is because so few Levium is because the Levium have to carry the Aron. You have to be very careful when you carry the Aron. If you weren't careful enough, it was a very strict punishment. So maybe the problem was that, you know, the Aron, you know, killed a lot of them. But the problem is, at this point in time, they didn't start doing it yet. So you can't attribute it to that. V'nei t'miya eich lo yiyu avada v'chasida v'ruchei Hashem k'shar kalam. You're talking about the Levium. They were always the most righteous. They were his servants. They were the most righteous, the most pious. They were the teachers of Torah. Why would they be so much less than everybody else? V'ani chayishev, says the Ramban, I think, shezeh chizuk l'masha amar abiseinu. This is a support for that which our sages say. Ki shifte shal Levi lehayu b'shiba in malechas mitzrayim avaydas perach. Tribe of Levi were not enslaved. Enslaved. V'nei Yisrael, when it comes to the rest of the Jewish people, Ashamiru Hamitzrayim Eschayehem, Avay the Kasha Kadei Lamatam, we know that the Egyptians, they got tired of seeing so many Jews. They figure they will decrease their population by enslaving them, by giving them, you know, this terrible labor. Okay? They were doing it in order to decrease their numbers. HaYakadosh Baruch Hu marba oisem k'neged zeres Mitzrayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it back to them, and Hashem made them multiply even more. As the Pasuk says, V'chashayanu oisei k'nyirba v'chen yifreitz. As they afflicted the Jewish people, that's the more they spread it, the more they multiplied. Okay? And when they said all the firstborn, all the children should be drowned, what happened again? The reward to the midwives was that they would multiply. Right? You guys are trying to go ahead and decrease. You know, let's see whose decree is gonna be victorious. So that's all regarding the rest of the Jewish people that were enslaved. They didn't get this special kind of bracha, this special blessing of multiplying, because there wasn't nothing. There was no slavery there for Hashem to stick it to the Mitzvah and say, no, it's going to be. We're going to do more than the opposite. Therefore, there weren't many of them. The whole point of the Jewish people's tremendous population explosion was Hashem showing the Egyptians, you're trying to decrease their numbers by enslaving. I'll show you, I'll increase it because of the slavery. And that didn't happen to the Levim because the Levim weren't enslaved. That's the first explanation that the Ramban gives. The next one he gives is, V'ulai ha'yazeh mikas hazakin aleihem. Maybe perhaps this was from the anger of the elder, referring to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov, before he died, and he called over his sons, Shimon and Levi, they were seemingly chastised for what they did. Yeah. And perhaps their lack of numbers was due to that. Ki Shimon shehu achshe meruba b'chlusin, because he says, the tribe of Shimon that right now was a very highly populated tribe, nismat miknisas al eretz lesser mishnayim elef. By the time they entered the land of Eretz Yisrael, by the time many of them died in a plague because of Zimri and Basur, right? They landed up at the end only being 22,000. That was a big change of them. V'levi shu shevet chasid v'lenismayit v'magefa. Meaning, the Ramban is saying, another explanation is, you know why the tribe of Levi is a small number? That has to do with the fact that Yaakov Avinu wasn't happy with them, with Levi, before he died. Well, the tribe of Shimon, there was plenty of them, says the Ramban, yeah, but the tribe of Shimon, a lot of them died out in a plague. And because Shevet Levi was Shevet Levi, they were a special tribe, they didn't die out in a plague, but rather, their numbers just never increased. So two explanations. So, the Aruch Chaim asks a very interesting question on the second explanation. He doesn't answer it, but I think it's an interesting explanation because it kind of shows you, it's an interesting point what happened later on. The Aruch Chaim, he asks a question like this. His question is that, he says, the second explanation of the Ramban, he's got a problem with. You don't see, I think he means to see, you don't see any, there's nothing in Yaakov's words there when he is speaking to Shimon and Levi that says that there's some kind of a hint there that their numbers won't increase. There's nothing about that in there. I think that's what he means. V'oid, more. Timothy b'mispar haba b'divrei hayamim. In the book of Divrei Hayamim, Chronicles 1, there is a sense, there's a count there also of the Levium. That was a count that Shlomo HaMelech made. King Solomon made a count. Hayu HaLevium Shemana, Hayu HaLevium, the Levium, the number mentioned of the Levium was Shmoina Ushloishim Elef, 38,000, Mi Ben Shloishim Shana Aben Chamishim Shana, from 30 to 50. The Mount of Levium, that were of age through the service of the Beis HaMikdash, were 38,000. Umisparim Parshas Nasai, but that same number in Parshas Nasai, in the next Parsha, next week's parsha, it came out to a count of 8,580. Okay? So in the desert, from 30 to 50 was 8,550. A couple of hundred years later, by the time Shlomo Melech comes around, you've got 38,000. Nimsu Shaisivu Dal Chalok and Bekir Val Misprazet. They multiplied, that's four times more. So almost four times more. Uba Misbar B'nei Yisrael Abasham, and the count of the Jewish people there, Mobo the Kapo Misbar Amrikan, there's not double here. Uba Aymed Misbar Zeh, Lechshu Nimnim Ben Esrim Ad Ben Meo Umayla. Now, if you're going to talk about, now, your count, that count of 38,000 was only from 30 to 50. But let's say you count from 20 to 100, which was the count of the Jewish people. Yachshem Yisrael, as the Jewish people were counted. Yachalias Misbar Mekagadol Shifta Yisrael Umayla. There could have been even a lot more. Vaye kasaviyim. So where do you see the father, the anger of Yaakov Avinu? The Arachim is saying, if we're going to say that the tribe of Levi was small because of Yaakov Avinu's anger at them, then why later on, in the times of Shlomo, do we see that the tribe of Levi, just 30 to 50 multiplied four times more? And we don't know how much more for 50 to 100 there are. By that point, you're going to have as many people as another tribe. And the rest of the Jewish people didn't multiply that much. So you see that there was a more, that at a certain point, the tribe of Levi multiplied more than the Jewish people. So therefore he says, where do you see the anger of Yaakov Avinu? If the anger of Yaakov Avinu was what's limiting their number, it should be that way later too. So I find that just a very, very interesting question that the Aruch Chaim asks. Have a good evening, everyone. I wish you all a good Shabbos, a good Yontif. And next week, because it's Yontif, there won't be a class, but we will return after that in Ritz Hashem.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Thank you.